Osiris.
Hey everyone, this is Gary from Which Is Better, a comedy podcast where two topics are discussed in an attempt to decide which is better. Our podcast is part of the Osiris Network. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. Relics Magazine is a media partner of Osiris. For music news, go to relics.com.
Wraps round me like a blanket tight, gets inside your seat and kills.
Ramzor Records is pleased to announce the release of the Ruin Brothers debut album, All My Shades of Blue, produced by Rick Rubin. Download All My Shades of Blue on June 1st, or get your vinyl via Ramzor Records on June 22nd. Learn more by visiting ramzorrecords.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Road to Now, episode 100.
I'm Ben Sawyer. This is where we quit. This is the last one. I'm Bob Crawford. This is it. 100 out.
This is it. It's the end of the century. Bob and I have decided that it's now time for the spaceship to show up. So we've got our fresh white Nikes on and we are getting ready to cover ourselves right here in the bunkhouse. See you guys later.
Oh man, back in the late 90s. So everything was just perfect. I mean, the worst thing going on were, you know, I don't know, there were some white militia groups and causing trouble and
Oklahoma City bombing,
these cults where, you know, the Hale Bopp comet was going to come sweep them up. And okay, so maybe the 90s weren't so great, but
yeah, you know what, Bob,
that's Willikers, man.
That's a great place to start, Bob, because one of the things I wanted to talk about on episode 100 was the problem of nostalgia.
Yeah, nostalgia sucks.
It is the core of Make America Great Again.
You know what is so funny? I was just reading John Fea's blog today, and he had a new poll about Trump evangelical support, white evangelical support. And there was an article or a comment from, I guess, the person who conducted the poll saying that the values voters, right, the white evangelical values voters from 10, 15 years ago are now nostalgia voters.
Yes. Yes.
It's no longer about creating a Christian society, a moral society. It's now it's about protecting a white majority.
Yeah, and the problem with nostalgia, as a rule, is that it is more emotion and gut feeling than it is logic. And it, you know what, Bob, I'm going to say this. I said this to somebody the other day. I was watching Cars, the movie Cars, with Solomon, my three-year-old son. Loves it. He just calls it Red Car. Makes him so happy.
I went through that myself.
Well, Bob, I was watching that with your kids. Both of them love it?
They Hallie was never really into it. Sam liked Cars 2. He never liked Cars 1.
What? You like the sequel? Anyway.
I think it was Michael Caine he liked.
Well, good for him. But the thing about Cars that got me was I was watching it with Solomon, and there's this scene. The movie came out in 2006. There's this scene. Because remember, all the cars, I don't know, if you haven't seen
oh,
it.
Oh, man, 2006.
Oh, bow, that was good.
So great.
Yeah, when we were all yelling that Bush was ruining America.
I got married in 2006. And, right, George Bush was ruining the country. And
we thought it could never. Everybody was like, how could it be any worse?
Yeah.
Than this.
Now I miss George Bush.
Yeah, isn't that funny? That's nostalgia,
I miss
Bob.
W.
Bob, he that's is, nostalgia.
He is a genius. If you hear him speak today, back when he spoke, when he was president, we were all like, he does not know how to speak. But now you hear him speak or what he said back then and the way he spoke, and you're like, man, that guy, he was coming from the heart. And sure, I didn't agree with I don't know, invading a sovereign nation and completely destroying the Middle East. But, you know, I think I'd enjoy having a beer with the guy.
He doesn't drink, Bob. And
but this- now, right, true. But now, it's... I can't even speak after what happened this week. I think everybody has their limit, their point where they're pushed to activism. And I almost feel like after Trump handed the nation over to Russia on Monday on a silver platter, I feel somewhat activated.
Who's not? This is something, you know, I want to go back to the nostalgia.
You're the
thing.
Russian. Well, you're the Russian history guy. I mean,
I am, and it's funny. Think, well, I'll tell you exactly what I told, what I said. On.
Let's bookmark nostalgia and come back to it in just a moment.
Okay, I will tell you the exact same thing, pretty much, that I said on Love It or Leave It when we recorded Wednesday night. When Levitt asked me the same question, "You're the Russia guy. What do you think about this?" And I said that, you know, in general, history is absolutely essential. You can't understand the present if you don't understand the past. And knowing the background is fundamental to understanding things. But in this case, I don't think you really need to know it. I mean, it is so obvious from, I mean, the question is on our side, right? We know what Putin's doing. We know Putin's up to no good. We know that Putin is, you know, after journalists and cracks down on free speech. That's, I mean, there's a separate question about U.S.-Russian relations in that history. For this, it's just that Trump admires strongmen. He's being bullied by this guy by some way or another, and he doesn't even know it. He is incapable of admitting that Russia might have hacked anything because he can't he can't stand that challenge to his ego because, I mean, we're still talking about Hillary Clinton 2 years
later. Wait, hold on, Ben. We don't know why. We don't know why. Trump has exhibited the behavior, the characteristics of someone who we know his ego is fragile and we know he's thin-skinned. And yet everything you're saying could be the reasons, or it's possible that Vladimir Putin has something on him, has something that he uses to manipulate. It could be hero worship, like Trump worships Putin. It's like hero worship. Or it could be, I will release X, Y, or Z, or I will tell the world about this, or I have this over you to make you behave the way I want you to behave, or it could be all of the above.
Right. Whatever it is, whatever the thing is, right? The end result is the same in this case, which is an American president showing an absolute deficiency of character, absolutely throwing his country under the bus.
Would you now, with the whole world watching, tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016, and would you warn him to never do it again?
All I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me, and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be. I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer.
Saying, I mean, this is where history is useful. Do you know the history of the Russian and before that Soviet intelligence services? Is that something you want to hold up and say is better than ours? Because they could find it. You want to know why the Russian intelligence service was so good under the Soviet Union and a lot into Russia? I don't have to respect human rights. That's the thing. You know, there's no rule of law. You can do whatever you want to.
Right. So this is what Trump voters say, because the poll came out this morning. This is Friday, whatever this day it is. It's Friday. This will air on Monday. A poll came out late last night, early this morning. Majority of, you know, 70-some percent of Republican voters think that we should have better relations with Russia. They think that Trump did great in Helsinki, and the rest of us are sitting here just completely baffled. You know what bothers me, Ben, is when someone says, like, when someone parrots Trump and Putin, when they say, well, what about the United States? The United States meddles in elections all over the world. They've always done it. What about that? So getting to what you just said, we meddle in other people's elections because we profess to being of a higher moral character and a higher moral quality. We mess in people's elections, not always for the right reasons, but often and historically, we have at least tried to maintain this idea of being pro-democracy, pro-free speech, pro-freedom of the press. And when Russia does it to us, as they did in 2016, what did they do? They pulled on the very threads that were already fraying apart. Like they tugged on racial injustice in the United States, of which there is a ton of. They pulled on Second Amendment activism, of which there is a ton of, right? So they're trying to topple our nation by exacerbating the fault lines that already exist. And what we've always done or said about ourselves as a nation is that, sure, we've got a lot of disagreements, we've got a lot of problems, but we ultimately, in the end, we, the United States of America, stands for equality and justice and we have a higher moral calling as Americans. That's why we're part of NATO. That's why we protect we've always tried to, protect other nations and tried to promote the expansion of democracy throughout the world, because our democracy here has allowed our economy to boom. Our safety, our freedom here has allowed a higher quality of life than much of the rest of the world has experienced over the past 70 years. So this whole what about, it's the Republicans who are parroting that are completely turning their back on Republican orthodoxy of the past 70 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's so much in that. Yeah, I mean, first of all, I haven't heard people saying this, like we get involved in other people's, Trump supporters saying we've done it too.
The president says it. Donald Trump says it. He said it in 2015 about Vladimir Putin.
Do you like Vladimir Putin's comments about you?
Sure. When people call you brilliant, it's always good, especially when the person heads up Russia.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it also is a person that kills journalists, political opponents, and
invades countries.
And invades countries. Obviously, that would be a concern, would it not?
He's running his country, and at least he's a leader, unlike what we have in this country.
Yeah, but again, he kills journalists that don't agree with him.
Well, I think our country does plenty of killing also, Joe. So.
This is the problem. When you acknowledge a history of behavior that is not fit with the moral character that you wish to have as an individual or as a nation, acknowledging that, to me, the only reason to do that is to acknowledge to move forward. To say we do it too and we're going to keep on doing it, that to me is the terrible cynicism, right? I mean, this is why we have to acknowledge what we've done in the world, is because, when you overthrow, regimes in Iran and regimes in Guatemala and regimes in Chile, you've done all these things. And then you go around preaching about democracy, you look like a hypocrite.
Right. So right now, Republicans say, well, we acknowledge that we did Iraq. We did Iraq. We should not have gone into Iraq. And so Republicans today, Trump Republicans, which I wish they would just change the name of the party, say, well, we did all that, so we're no better than Putin. Are we better than Putin, Ben?
Yes. I mean,
yes, we're better than Putin.
How do you?
Yes, we're better than Putin.
Yes, but then this is what confuses me, which is if we are, and this the whole we're the greatest country on the planet thing irks me. It's the greatest place for me. I've been a lot of places. I came back. We're the greatest country on earth is just a little bit cocky, right? But here's the thing. We have to hold ourselves to standards. Everything about what we say about ourselves that at least we identify ourselves with is some basis of values, right? What makes an American isn't ethnicity. What makes an American isn't religion. Those aren't the things that make an American. It's an adherence to a certain set of values. And if we're sitting there saying, we did all this stuff too, so I guess it's okay if somebody else does, man, that is how you lower your standards. What you've got to say is, hey, we did these things. We're now acknowledging them in a way that nobody would have ever acknowledged them, I think, 10 years ago, right? That's a good first step, I guess. But the reality is, you go, we did those things. So now we understand why maybe you guys wouldn't trust us as much, and maybe why we've come across as a little bit, crass to you guys and a little bit unconcerned. But we did those things, and you know what? We're not going to do those things anymore. And because we now realize that, you know, that was wrong. Not say, well, Russia does it too. Okay, cool. Well, I guess everybody will do it. That's not how you aspire to be better.
Let's take Republicans in Congress. They're parroting Trump because they're afraid of Trump voters and how Trump can ruin your career and your political career with a tweet if he so wants. And the only reason why Trump justifies his relationship with his aspirational relationship with Russia and says, well, we do bad stuff too. The only reason why he says it is because he either wants to be like Vladimir Putin, which is quite possible, or he wants business in Russia, which is quite possible, or Putin has something on him, which is quite possible. It's all quite possible. So, and Putin, and as you've told me, Russians have always said that. Well, like, look at civil rights. What were the Russians or the Soviets saying about the United States during the civil rights era?
Oh, yeah.
We're no better. We're no better, right?
Well, they were saying they were way better.
They were saying that they were better. Look at the way we treat African Americans in our own country. Right. And so, but now you have an American president parroting a Russian president.
Right.
That has never happened before.
A Russian president, a North Korean president, you know, making fun of the media with him. Like these guys, he actually said in that press conference, these guys, they don't stop. And I was like, you know, I bet Kim Jong-un was thinking, well, in North Korea, they never start. I don't see how you look at this guy and don't see an ambition to be a dictator. He admires those guys.
He's well on his way. As long as, this gets down to this. Okay, so if you're activated, do you point your ire towards the president, right, or try to seek change from the president? No, he'll never change. You need to call your congressman and your senator, which I called a few congressmen and senators this week, and I left messages, which were very respectful messages, but I voiced my opposition to their reaction to the Helsinki speech. And I think if anyone here is disturbed by that speech or the behavior of this president, they need to reach out to their local congressman, whoever their congressman is, and the senators in their state, and maybe the other congressmen in their states, and let them know how you feel.
Yes.
Because we're not going to change Donald Trump.
Right. Well, and one of the things that I think is useful as well is, like, we saw what happened, and I wish more people had taken this lesson away from the immigration thing, the zero tolerance, separating families. We saw what happened whenever the policy itself was what was attacked. The humanity of the policy was brought to light. People were willing to change. I think what the thing is now that people. And, you know, I said this in the first episode number one, that people's ideologies are so attached to their chest that they can't take them off. If you say anything bad, I mean, the other day on Facebook, I said something about Milo Yiannopoulos wishing that journalists would get killed. And I said this, the quote I said was, when you empower a would-be king, you become the pawn. And I was talking about Milo Yiannopoulos, who's a maniac. And a bunch of my Republican friends jumped up and were like, yeah, but what about Antifa? What about this? What about this? It's the whataboutism. And I was like, guys, I never saw any of you. I don't see Yiannopoulos as in any way a representative of the Republican Party. I know that he was asked to speak at the GOP convention, but I mean, I listened to some right wing podcasts and things like that. Those guys write that guy off, but they can't help it because they saw their side was getting attacked, and they immediately sided with a maniac. And this is what's happening. People are so wrapped up in it. But when you make the issue, look, these children are getting separated from their families. The policy itself, the humanity of the policy, if you would have said Trump is doing this and that's all people said, people who support Trump would have come up with a lot of reasons. I think some of them would have seen it was a problem, but they never would have responded the way that they did whenever people attacked the issue. My aunt is from a very conservative part, very pro-Trump part of South Carolina. She came to visit me the week after that policy was put in place. And she was talking about her preacher had come in the Sunday before, and he had given a sermon about Jeff Sessions quoting the Bible. He quoted the Bible. The preacher came in and he apologized. He said, I usually don't bring politics into the church. He said, but I was laying in bed last night and I couldn't sleep. And I got up and wrote an entirely new sermon for today because I think this is wrong. And she, for the first time, I saw her willing to criticize Trump. She said everyone in her church loved it. People that didn't go to her church heard about that sermon and were asking her about it because they heard it was so good. There are ways to go at it. I think that constantly going at Trump first and then the policy is not going to work as well as if you attack the policy, point out what's going on. Then people might listen. But people, yeah. I mean, and that's the problem with the Helsinki summit.
It's hard. And Ben, you know, you're raising a young son and I'm raising a young son. And it, everything we were taught to be is, as when we were being taught right from wrong and how to speak with people and how to show respect and how not to make fun of people. And Trump is the epitome of a bully. And so on the one hand, you want to attack Trump because of his behavior, right? But that doesn't impact his supporters at all. At all, especially when you have women at his rallies after the Access Hollywood tape wearing shirts they made with an arrow pointing down to their private parts saying, touch me here. Well, obviously, if I say, well, you know, Donald Trump made fun of a disabled reporter, I don't support him because I don't think the president of the United States should behave like that. Well, it's not going to impact these people. They don't care. They don't care. Well, and when you look and getting to the Cutter Callaway episode, RTN Theology 4 that aired last week, look at the stories we are telling ourselves as a culture between Disney princesses and The Bachelor. This is where we are mentally. This is where we are culturally. So anyway,
I think
we're digressing. What did we bookmark?
Let me say this first.
47. This first. I don't have a
very good those are all part of our cultures, right? But every day we raise kids, and every day I raise my son, and he's three and a half. I'll sit down and talk to him about how when he does something that hurts people, it affects other people. He doesn't understand a lot of the words, but one day he will. And the minute that he understands the whole thing, it'll be right there because I give him that talk. That you got to love people, you got to look out for people, that if you don't look out for people, then you're not doing your job to the people around you, and that you got to love people, you know, that you, and I tell them that. I sit down and talk to them. I'm like, you got to love our neighbors, right? That I know, I understand that kid wants your toy, but you got to love him because you know what? You get it some and he gets it some. And if only one of you guys gets it, one of you guys is going to feel an inordinate amount of sadness. You know how you feel good when you get it? He feels good when he gets it. Watch, look at him. Look how happy
he is.
So
look, you're teaching him socialism. That's what you're doing. You're teaching him socialism.
La Cosecha Coffee Roasters provides fresh roasted coffee grown in a sustainable manner where the farmer is given a fair price, which means the coffee goes straight from the harvest to your cup. The best part? You can get 10% off your next purchase by using the promo code RTN1010 at checkout. Visit lacosecha.com or follow the links at theroadtonell.com.
Okay. All right, speaking of Solomon, wrapping it back around. He's been at a daycare for the last like 4 weeks. I'm in California, so I spend a lot of time with him. Anyway, Cars, the movie Cars. I was watching that movie, and of course, it's easy looking back on things. You know, it's like you know, the narrative's there, so you kind of fall into it. But I still think this. There's like a whole scene where, like, you know, the red car, Lightning McQueen, breaks down in this town, Route 66, where, you know, everything's sad and, you know, people are happy, but they're like, oh, it was the good old days are behind us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then the girl car takes him out and tells him a story about how it was amazing because, you know, back before they built Interstate 40, you know, people didn't drive to get somewhere. They drove to enjoy the road and talked about, you know, showed this golden age and this James Taylor song plays in the background. It is so sappy. And I looked at that and was like, oh my God, like those seeds of Make America Great Again were planted because kids grew up watching that. You know, if you were 8 years old, whenever that movie came out, guess what? You could vote in 2016. And it's everywhere, man. The nostalgia, and it's such a gut sense. And it's like, dude, really? Like, honestly, as someone that just drove 3 days from Nashville to California on Interstate 40, I wouldn't drive, you know, when would you be like, I'd rather spend an extra 6 days and stay in motels and, you know, just go 45 all the way. When did you have the time to do that? You know why they invented airplanes? Like, because people wanted to get places faster. Airplane industry is doing pretty well, but it doesn't matter. Because your brain gets cut off and that music starts playing and you're like, oh yes, the good old days. And whenever you set yourself up like that and you don't go, oh, the good old days, like back before Interstate 60 when segregation was legal, you know, and no cars had any exhaust defense on them and they didn't, you had to pay extra for a seatbelt. And, you know, it's like, this is why studying history is so essential, because yes, there were times that were cool, but sometimes I feel like America is just like that brother or in Napoleon Dynamite, the one who's like, I could throw this football over the moon. You know, I could throw it over those mountains right there. It's like, dude, no, you're just saying that because it was a long time ago and nobody else was there anymore. And you can do it. Study history, please. Don't fall for this stuff, man.
I just say I've spent the past almost 12 weeks studying anti-Catholicism, first in the 1830s to the 1850s, and then now recently studying it during the Revolutionary period. And you got to realize, people, that the Protestants in this country, this was a Protestant nation. And over time, Quakers received rights, Baptists received rights, toleration, if you will. But the Catholics were pretty thoroughly demonized. And when something went wrong, they were immediately scapegoated. In the Revolution, the Stamp Act comes out. People protested the Parliament. The colonists protested the Parliament, saying it's a papist plot to take over our churches, replaced our ministers with priests, and our king, who was the Protestant savior, the king was the Protestant savior, and replaced our Protestant king with a pope. Well, then things started happening more frequently and things became more oppressive, and they began to see more and more soldiers on the streets of Boston and Philadelphia. And then they realized that it was actually the king who was in on the papist plot. And so Catholicism was just used over and over again as a scapegoat. So you got to remember that, because a lot of these Republicans who support Donald Trump are Catholic. And it's you got to realize, at one point, you were the immigrant.
Yep.
You were the one that people were blaming everything on. You were the one that were changing the culture. You are changing the culture of this nation. And that's what Trump said when he was in England.
And I know it's politically not necessarily correct to say that, but I'll say it, and I'll say it loud. And I think they better watch themselves, because you are changing culture. You are changing a lot of things. You're changing security. Look at what's happening. I mean, you take a look. I mean, look at what's happening to different countries that never had difficulty, never had problems. It's a very sad situation. It's very unfortunate. But I do not think it's good for Europe, and I don't think it's good for our country. We're, as you know, far superior to anything that's happened before, but we have very bad immigration laws.
Ben and I have ranted on this episode.
I want to add.
We probably shouldn't air this episode.
Maybe
it should be our last episode.
maybe people listen to this and nobody will subscribe anymore. No, I want to add this too, because this is what's funny. you hear a lot of like the people being like, my family immigrated here legally. And like, I've seen a lot of great takedowns about that. Like, of course they did, because there's no restriction on who could come in until 1882. Or, you know, after that, you know, it was basically Chinese and Asians. And then it goes on to be different groups. But the one thing I never hear anybody mentioning about we immigrated here illegally is that for many people, for a long time after the American Revolution, it was illegal to leave England. Because monarchies don't work like democracies. In a democracy, the government owes you something. But in a monarchy, you owe the monarch something. And tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Russians left Tsarist Russia to come here. If you were from the Tsarist Empire before 1914, if any of your people were from the Tsarist Empire, that's like, you know, modern Ukraine, most of it, Russia, down through into, you know, Central Europe. If your family was from there, they did not immigrate here legally. They illegally left Russia and were not allowed to go back and were essentially criminals. If you came from England after the American Revolution, it was not legal for you to come here. So you can say it was legal to come here, but you were not legal immigrants because you broke a law in your own country to come here. And if you're sitting there thinking, well, yeah, but that's okay, well, maybe then you're on, maybe you don't actually believe what you think you believe. Bob, I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
When we started this podcast, our first episode aired on May 6th of 2016. Is that to that point we had been friends and you had loved history and you were one of my favorite people.
Right now I hate you and I hate history.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask about. Which one do you hate more now? Now that you spend so much more time working with both of them.
Let me tell you, I've basically done a six-week class in 4 weeks.
I know, amazing.
And then I did another six-week class before that. So I'm getting close to hating history as much as I hate you.
That's so nice, Bob. I actually keep a chart on my wall.
It is. First of all, it's awesome sitting there reading letters from Washington to from various people, and then looking for. I've been studying Catholics and during the Revolution, and I know that Washington wrote to John Carroll, who went on to be the first bishop in America, and he needed his help with the French Canadians. And I can't find that letter, but I know that letter exists. What? You know what I'm saying? Like where you're just looking and you put all these databases and search things and you type in and you type it, you put the words a different order and you get different results. And
Bob,
and then figuring out how the format goes, you know, how to do a bibliography and appropriately and how to cite sources in the appropriate way. And it's really awesome stuff, but it takes a lot of time.
Yeah. Bob,
it's almost as if historians are people that, do it 8 hours a day and don't have a job and don't have families and don't have podcasts. So
no, they're just people whose families wish they didn't have them and whose podcast co-hosts wish that they weren't there and who spend more when they're researching. This is why it's like, I'm listening to you and I'm like, yeah, I remember those days. As someone who spent about a year and a half getting up every day and going and sitting with folders of Soviet government documents from the 1920s, dude, nobody knew a bureaucracy like the Soviet government in the 1920s. And you know what? Nobody in the 1920s knew who was responsible for anything. And so you got to go through like all these different organizations. You'll get order like three folders, 300 pages of documents. And they might just be a bunch of replicas of things you've seen in the other files. You don't know until you look through them page by page by page. And then you find the golden gem. And it's not air conditioned, Bob. It's hot in Moscow in the summer. And it's not air conditioned. And they yell at you if you ask for something that doesn't seem like it's on your theme. And I don't know, man. Trying to put this in context for you, you know, trying to put this
it's like
2006, you know, Bush doesn't seem that bad anymore.
It's crazy. You know what scares me? Someday Trump may not seem so bad anymore. Isn't that crazy? And from like there are people out there like, oh, Bob's got Trump derangement syndrome. I have not been, you know what? After the election, not the way I wanted to turn out, two terrible choices, but I woke up the day after the election and said, Well, I'm moving on. Like, this is, we're going to move forward. Who knows? Maybe it won't. And I was quickly, within weeks, I realized this isn't going to be good. And then Charlottesville happened, which is absolutely horrible. And immigration, and probably like 10 things that I've completely forgot, in between, because every day is a new, just bucket of poop dumped on our heads. But someday there's going to be something worse than Trump. And I just hope that the good Lord takes me before that happens.
Bob, and I got to say, one of the many reasons why I love Bob is because I just told him about how much harder it was for me in archives. And Bob didn't say, the most obvious response was, really? Did you have a wife and did you have two kids and did you have a band that toured all over the country?
That's
and
right.
Did you do radio shows in the morning and then have to do a podcast with a jackass on Friday afternoon? Did you have to do all those things while you were?
Jackass.
No, you didn't, jackass. Did you? So I'd like to go to Russia to get in those archives too.
Yeah. Well, Ben, someday maybe Russia's going to come to you, buddy.
I don't ever want to leave LA right now. Actually, that's a lie. All I want to do is go back to Nashville. But there they remember. They remember me trying all the jokes at open mics.
So what do you do when you're in LA? You're just doing your material from Nashville and it's new again.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think it was Seinfeld said that a joke is like a magic trick, but with the joke you actually reveal the trick when you do it. Like, you show how the trick is done. So it's never as fascinating as it was the first time. And like, some comics are better at act outs than others. Like Bill Burr, you can watch him over, Patton Oswalt, you listen to them over and over again. But with me, I'm not that good. What a surprise. Yet. So it's like, you know, you work jokes out at open mics and then everybody's heard you try to do that trick a couple of times and then you pull it, you know, the rabbit's dead when you pull it out of the hat. And then the next time the rabbit's missing an ear and eventually the rabbit comes out, but they've all seen how you shoved the rabbit in the bottom of the hat the first time.
And I'm trying to make a parallel here. The SPCA is going to come after you, Ben.
Dude, don't hurt rabbits, man.
Yes, they should.
My cat. They need to come after my cat. My cat murders rabbits nonstop, but that's another story.
Yes.
Bob, what do you think is the thing that most Americans get wrong about history? What's like the one thing?
That it ends at a certain point, like that this moment is the end of history, right? That the time, history is of the past. That's the thing that people get wrong. History is the present. We are living in I think every period is a historical period, but this one's a big one. This one's a doozy. This one's a multiple volumes. I mean, like a lot of ink or a lot of computer. A lot of people are going to get cramps from typing in their computers about this period in history. This period of history is going to be the best thing for orthopedic surgeons. All the carpal tunnel syndrome going to go down after this. This is, if you got a kid, I'm telling my son, orthopedic surgery, because in 10 years, 15 years, when they start to write the history this time, people are going to hands be cramping up.
So that's great that you wanted to be a surgeon, but Solomon's three, and I'm going to encourage Solomon to build a robot that does all the surgery. So it turns out maybe the best thing you can do is to get your kid to hang out with Solomon. So he'll teach him how to work on the robot that does the carpal tunnel surgery. I think that's the way you got to think about things anyway, man.
No matter who's president, no matter what crisis we're facing, we got to keep going. Got to keep moving on. Or as a friend of mine likes to say, you got to kick it. You got to keep kicking it. So we're going to keep kicking it. And we hope that you kick it with us.
Yes. Continue to kick it with us.
And we're going to get episodes up as often as we can. I don't know that we'll have them up weekly. But we're going to try to be at least two a month. And if we can get more in, we got some ideas for some live things and some series and some great things coming. Just stay tuned and stay with us, and thank you and God bless, and happy 100th episode, Road to Net.
Happy anniversary, Bob.
All right.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Road to Now. We want to thank our Patreon members for their continued support. A special shout out to our Washingtonians, Tanya Marsh, Mary Hocking, Paul Ayler, Tim and Caitlin Wells, Peggy Donica, Jeff LeCain, and Fig White. To join our team of patrons and get extra content, you can go to patreon.com/theroadtonow or just go to theroadtonow.com, our website, and click on the support tab at the top of our page. If you're unable to support us financially, that's okay. We've all been there before. You can still support us, though, by telling a friend about our podcast and by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. That only takes a few minutes, and it does a lot to help us spread the word. The Road to Now is produced by Bob Crawford and Ben Sawyer. Our social media manager is Austin Sawyer. And today's music, like almost always, is by the talented and lovely Paul DeFiglia. For the Road to Now crew, I'm Ben Sawyer. Take care.